From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KTYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show, the Dugout Podcast. Of course, we're going to talk our squad and, of course, around MLB before we get off because we're getting down to the wire here on the 2021 regular season. AL and NL got some thoughts I want to share. Let's get right into it, man. As far as the Yankees today. Man, I thought we were going to lose that. I ain't going to lie, man, with those Gill giving up those bombs early on to Polanco and Sano and Buxton, and then down 5-0, I saw a drag bunt by Joey Gallo. I couldn't believe what I was watching, man. But anything for desperation to get on base, they had no hits up until that point. But, man, listen, this was a terrible week, all right? Yeah, we can't – the Yankee fans have been – we all been communicating all week. And they the most optimistic Yankee fan is just like, man, F this, F that. And we're going to have that discussion because – with Toronto. Now, was it more great Toronto and bad Yankees? Like, maybe there is something to it with Toronto. They've been on a roll, and they put up a 22 spot on the Orioles. I mean, I know it's the Orioles, but, I mean, they've been bombing. I saw that score on Sunday. I'm like, nah, no way. Yeah, I thought it was a miscalculation. I went to that game, and like, yo, they are on a roll, man. And this is the reason why they got the second wild card spot behind Boston. Even though we're like a half game or a game behind anyway, if anything goes, we just got to do our job, right, Susie Prof, right at the C-Notes. Let's bring them on. Susie Prof, say hello real quick. Then I'll go to Carl, say hello to you as well. We got to talk about what the hell happened at Citi Field, and what the hell happened versus the Blue Jays. Susie Prof, Bleeding Yankee Blue, how you doing? Real quick, say hello.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, you know what? It was a roller coaster of a ride this weekend. And even before that, being swept by the Blue Jays, I mean, you're right. They came in, and the Yankees well knew that they were coming in hot, and they did, and they blew us away. So to answer your question, it was them coming in hot, but us being so cold, not able to even – like move runners out of scoring position and across home plate. And then we got to talk about the most ridiculous, most embarrassing error I have ever seen committed by anybody. And of course it was committed by Gary Sanchez once again. So I'm looking forward to the debate. Maybe it'll be a little therapy tonight. And I know that they wanted to bring in Roy Kent of the fictional Richmond football club to talk to that team, but I'll tell you what, no amount of motivational speaking is going to help this team. The only people that are going to help this team are the team themselves, and they got to look themselves in the mirror and say, how much do I want this? And honestly, unfortunately, the person that's pulling the string is Brian Cashman. And then on the field is Aaron Boone. So we're in a real pickle of a situation. It's not a place that I wish we were in. But we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it. And you know what, Susie Prof? We are going to extend the olive branch, the therapy of your New York Football Giants as well. I know you're feeling bad about your New York Football Giants. You could have picked a better platform to extend that therapy beyond baseball to the gridiron as well, if you choose to do so. And there's nobody else better to share those sentiments with the great Carl to see at the C-Notes with us on his Yankees as well. Man, what's up, man? How you doing, man?
So we went from one bad football team to a bad baseball team all with a short span of time? I don't know which one's bad and which one's worse. One of them is. Flip a coin.
That's a great question. Let's take a vote. Let's take a vote. No, the football. I'm going to go football. I'm going to go to football.
All right.
Susie Powell, you want to answer that question? You're in the same boat with us on this.
What, as far as which part of
what
that
was
do
worse?
You want me to answer?
Okay,
let's phrase it this way. I'll phrase it this way.
Yeah.
What was worse?
Yeah.
Sunday's game, Sunday's football game, which was god awful, or the last week of Yankees baseball?
The last week of Yankee baseball, because I'm in the thick of it, and I think the Giants can recover from that first week, I hope. And maybe I'm just so expecting it from the Giants that, because I know they don't play the second half of any game, that I guess I was anticipating it. But the Yankees, that was just so embarrassing because it was such bad baseball all around. I'm not saying that wasn't bad football yesterday, because it was, but I expected it not to go well for us as Giant fans.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, Susie, probably, then we could go to Carl. Okay, over the last week, Toronto, the Mets. All right, the makeup game versus Minnesota, you technically you complete the sweep after, you know, playing that makeup game earlier today. But Toronto, it has really been on a roll. And I hate to make excuses, because the crazy thing about this whole 13-game win streak versus the letdown over the last 14 games, whatever, the 13-game win streak, we were playing against playoff teams. Like, the opponents were playoff bound, you know, the Braves, and, you know, Oakland was in the thick of things. Maybe you don't want to count, you know, the Angels, but, you know, beating up on Boston. And then you let down versus, the Baltimore Orioles, and Toronto's been hot. You know, I always thought they were a viable team. They're always on the up, and they're really putting it together, and they're beating up on opponents like we should be. They've done a great job turning that around, reliable starting pitching. But the Mets, you know, the Mets are a scrappy bunch. They've had their ups and downs this season. But I think what really ticked me off over the weekend with that series was really Friday, like you said, with the errors. And, like, I didn't even complete watching that game. I saw the defensive errors, and I left. I bounced. I cut it off. I said, I'll catch up with this game later, because I'm not going to let this start my weekend and piss me off. And they did ended up losing that game, and they came back and covered Saturday. But Sunday, after the Giants lost, Lindor has a 3-home run game. He just kills the Yankees, like he always does with the Indians. So, you know, I hate to make excuses. This is bad baseball. And today's game is like, don't fool me, man. Yeah, you were down 5-0, but this is still bad. You know, like, I'm trying to be optimistic. Good that they came back, but still big picture. We still have issues pitching wise, defensively. Just trying to chase our tail, man. Go ahead and give it your thoughts, because you wanted to lay out the defensive work with Gary Sanchez. We already know that's always been an issue with, you know, Gio Urshela as well. You know, Gleyber Torres at second base, moving these guys around. I'll get to the positives later, but let's attack what the hell is going on, and we go with a Carl after that. Are you there?
I'm here. Sorry. I think I was muted.
Right, cool.
Gleyber Torres obviously started at second base today for a reason, and I don't know if he's just more comfortable there. I mean, he was groomed as a shortstop in the farm leagues, and when, you know, that spot became available, they slotted him in with D.G. Gregorius's departure. He just hasn't been comfortable there. His transitions are just not good. I don't know if he doesn't know how long it's going to take for him to go from catching the ball to executing a good throw from shortstop, but I don't know if it's the shift. I really don't know what it is, but he's a hole in the middle of the infield when he plays shortstop, and it makes me nervous. As of late, he's turned the bat around. But honestly, he's also been cold at the plate, which has, you know, led to him not playing as many games. I mean, obviously we had the IL and mixed up in there, but Gleyber Torres certainly isn't playing to the level that I thought he'd be playing at this point. I was disappointed last season, but that was a small N, right? We only had 60 games last season. This season I've been nothing but disappointed in his play. And Gary Sanchez is Gary Sanchez. And I'll tell you what, Gio Urshela just hasn't seemed right since coming back from the IL, the COVID, and then the injury that he suffered. He's not comfortable at all. He looks like a deer in headlights. and he's one of my favorites. And he had a couple errors over the weekend. I know he had, they called it an E5 on his throw, I mean, to the plate, which Sanchez completely blew. I mean, he didn't even move to catch the ball. Just, honestly, I think it's an E2. I didn't think the throw was that bad. And at that point, if you're going to give the guy an error, don't go for the ball then, right? Which might have made it even worse. But the errors, the lack of consistency, the inability to move, you know, runners from scoring position across the plate, as I said before. This team's terrible. It's just not good baseball. They're not even – they're writing a ticket to not even make it to the postseason. They're writing a ticket to get a good tee time at this point. They look so awful. And I wrote a few pieces. I mean, the big meltdown. Yeah, it's a meltdown. And the September skid, which at this point – it's a skid, it's a slump, it's a, I don't know what the heck has happened, but the timing couldn't be worse for this team. And then we've got Gerrit Cole telling his manager he needs to leave because he has something going on with his hamstring. And then Aaron Judge has a dizzy spell yesterday, the only guy that's actually doing anything at the plate. I mean, Gallo, you know, cream one. But I mean, Judge has really carried this team on his shoulders. And I'll tell you what, he didn't look good in the outfield, which clearly, I mean, normally he's defensively doing really well in the outfield, when, you know, and they pulled him, clearly. He had some dizzy spells. The Yankees just can't get a break. And the management of that team is just awful. And I can't believe we're going to be stuck with Boone until, like, 2026. Did I read that correctly? That makes me sick, Steve. So they're going to have to fire this guy because he can't execute. He looks confused, and he doesn't know how to play. I mean, what kind of reasoning goes into, oh, we don't want to play Giancarlo Stanton three times in a row in the field? So you sit his hot bat when he's actually – his timing is spot on right now, and he's getting, like, clutch base hits, you're sitting him. I don't get it. I don't. I don't understand the methodology. I know that they look at data. Okay, fair enough. But at some point, you got to go by feel. And there's still managers out there that go by feel. And I think a lot of times those are the managers that are winning because they can get a read, a pulse on a player, and they are playing hot players. They're not sitting players who are on, you know, on a roll, quite frankly. And we do that. Oh, because we want to get a rest day. We're going to sit Rizzo today. He needed a rest day. I've been waiting. It's been on my calendar, he says today. Really? Okay. Rizzo's been hot. So why would you sit him? Ridiculous. He's playing a day game. Okay. And then he travels. He doesn't have till tomorrow night. That, to me, you get the evening off. That's pretty good. But you know what? We're in the stretch. The stretch is here. He said he's been saving players for the stretch. Well, Aaron Boone, the stretch is here. Either we're playing them, playing the hot team, or we're going to find ourselves waiting for a tee time come October.
Let me say this real quick before we go to call. I got to give, you know, I'm not saying sit or play Rizzo. Obviously, I would like to see Rizzo as much as we can. But I love the at-bat today when he came in to pinch hit, man, because this guy has great quality at-bats, man. It really does. He is patient, man. And I love that it set the tone to get that walk, man, and help get those runs in the later innings. Hey, Carl, what's your thoughts, man, over the last week versus the Blue Jays, the Mets, and everything you're seeing? And who are the real Yankees? Is it the 13 win streak team, or is it this up and down since the win streak team? And then anything else you'd like to add?
Wow, so we got a lot there. Boy, I'm going to have to address some of that in a second. The Blue Jay thing, I think I may have mentioned this a few weeks ago. The Blue Jays are probably the most undervalued team in baseball just based on run differential. They were around plus 100 around August, right around the trade deadline, but for whatever reason we're in fourth place. And so what basically happened is that as time has gone on, Toronto's performance has matched what their run differential has been all year. it was only a matter of time, just based on that, that they were going to, if unless some just sort of really bad luck happened, they were going to overtake the teams that were ahead of them in the standings, and that's exactly what's happened. So the Blue Jay thing really should not come as a shock to anybody, and that's where anybody that tracks run differential and that type of data could see that that was coming. But for whatever reason, during a period of time, I know there was like a 10 or 15 game stretch where they were hitting, I think it was they were hitting like 060 with runners in scoring position over a course of like 15 games. It was crazy. Like for a team with that much talent offensively, Hernandez, Guerrero, Bichette, all those dudes to be hitting 060 with runners in scoring position, it just doesn't make any sense. So I was not surprised by what happened there. As far as the Mets series go, hey, listen, you know, that sort of, you know, when you're sort of a middling team like the Yankees are, you know, those are sort of the results. Here's the big thing that has really been overseeing all of this. You know, when the Yankees had that run of about 35-11, I think their ERA starting pitching-wise was like 2.8. And now you look at the last like 13 or 14 games, and their ERA is much, much, much higher than that. So all that has really happened. The runs have basically been about the same still. They've been pretty consistent. Like, they haven't really had a big dip in runs scored or a big dip in runs, you know. It hasn't been like they're scoring six runs or scoring two runs now. Like, that, they've been pretty consistent if you just average it out. The pitching is the thing. They have no bullpen. All the guys have either gotten hurt, underperformance, or guys who are pitching above their level have regressed. Starting pitching-wise, it's pretty much been the same thing. You know, Jameson Taillon had a period of about 8 weeks where he's pitching to an ERA of 1.2. That was not going to be sustainable. So that sort of leveled itself out. Guys got hurt. Guys aren't, you know, Taillon hasn't been in the rotation, I believe, the last, like, I believe, week and change now. Cole missed his start. You know, Kluber came back. But unfortunately, the Kluber that folks may have thought they were getting when he got hurt initially is not the same guy. As he's come back, they were hoping on Severino. I remember we had that discussion, you, me, and Jimmy, a couple weeks ago. Severino has not come back. It's the middle of September. It's probably not going to come back the rest of the season. So the pitching staff, they basically have run out of enough quality pitchers to pitch the innings. So any decision that you can make is goes under that idea that you don't have a bunch of options. And the ones you do have are bad options. I mean, Chad Green's given up, as I think, now 13 or 15 home runs this season. Hey, what are you going to do? You going to go to somebody else? Oh, come on. What are we talking about here? And, you know, we're talking about Stanton in the outfield. Listen, that I'm going to keep saying this. I feel like I don't know if I have to – if I'm just banging my head into the wall whenever I hear this. Some of these decisions, a lot of them, are management decisions. The reason why Giancarlo Stanton is not playing every day in the outfield is because management has decided that that's not going to happen. That is being sent down, and the manager is following orders. He's not making that decision independent of anybody else. Like, that's, we've been talking about this for weeks now, for months now. I mean, I joined you guys late in July, but that decision right there is being made based on management. He is not going to be playing consistently in the outfield as long as he is managing the team, as long as management has given him those orders, period, end of story. And as far as the whole feel thing, someone needs – Susie, maybe I'm missing something, but can you just like name me the teams that are using the field thing and are winning all these games? Because I'm looking at the standings here: Houston Astros, Tampa Bay, Milwaukee, L.A., San Francisco. I mean, those have been about the five. I think those are the five or six best teams in the league right now, and every one of those teams I'm looking at are heavy data-driven teams. The teams that have won in the past, Red Sox, Dodgers, Houston the year before that, Cubs. Is there some secret team that I'm not aware of that is going rogue and being successful? Because those teams are far, far less than the overall whole. Like I said, maybe I'm missing something, but as the league, we have evolved, the league has evolved. You know, the days of like, you know, 1970, I refer to it as sort of like 1970s and 1980s thinking. You know, the way we think about baseball in those terms don't exist anymore. They've been basically ushered out of the sport. And I know there's a portion of fans that are that watch these games and don't really believe it, but that's the way it is. And, you know, we can say, hey, get rid of Boone and bring in somebody else. You know the next guy that the Yankees are going to bring in? The Yankees are going to bring in whoever they're basically going to bring in Aaron Boone 2.0 because he's going to be doing the exact same things that Boone has been doing because it's being carried down by management and it's just being executed by him on a daily basis. If folks don't come to that realization soon, they're going to be having the exact same frustrations with the next guy who's managing the team. Just come to that conclusion now and save yourself the aggravation.
Okay. Before we move on, I would like to bring Jimmy on. Susie Prof, do you want any thoughts? Carl had some good points. And anything else you'd like to say as far as how management is operating with these, you know, how baseball is in the general? I mean, that's kind of what it is. And it's unfortunate because I am more like you, Susie Prof. I am about how it used to be and kind of how it is now. Is just, you know, we're attached to the team through our fanship. And I think the frustration comes is, You know, I'm not disagreeing with Carl, and because I understand he's logically putting it out there on the table. It's just that if it's not translating into Yankee championships, then yeah, a lot of Yankee fans are going to say it's not working. What's your thoughts, Susie Prof? And then we'll go to Jimmy, and then we'll go back around and get some thoughts.
Carl, let me say this: I just don't think the numbers are enough. I think you need to know the game. You need to know how to play the game. You need to know how to play in a National League park, which I don't think Boone knows how to do. I've been saying that for quite some time now, not just this season, not just last season. I also don't think just because you were an analyst and your family played that you know baseball. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case. But there is a lot of characteristics that go with a good manager. And obviously, number one is you got to know the game. Number two, you got to listen to the coaching staff. And sure, you've got to follow what's going on, trend data. You got to look at the data on your team clearly and your individual players. Some of it has to come into, like, mindset and understanding what a player is going through and getting a read and getting a feel for how that player has been playing. Is he trending up? If he's been hitting well with runners in scoring position, if he's been seeing the ball well, then you keep playing the guy. You keep putting the best team on the field. You don't just run the numbers. You got to, at that point, go with your gut and go with performance. And that's how I feel about that. I think it has to be a combination of everything. It's like, you know, data-informed decisions is not just looking at numbers. It's looking at the qualitative data as well. And so that's where I think, you know, Boone lacks the ability. And maybe it is the front office and Boone. It's a combination of both. But there are certain things that, like, he's like a stick in the mud about, like, not playing Giancarlo Stanton every fourth day. And I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. If you're in a National League park, you can't slot Stanton to DH clearly. And so you need to do something about that. You need to think about that. Even if you don't get him to play the whole game, you got to do something and really play the hot players. I love Brett Gardner, and I realize he hit a home run the day that I actually tweeted, why are you playing Gardner? Why isn't Gallo in the field? but at the end of the day, you know I love Gardner. I wouldn't have played him. I wouldn't have started him. I likely would have kept Gallo in there. He's a terrific left fielder besides. But whatever. So that's how I feel. I know you want to go to Jimmy, but I think it has to be you've got to triangulate data, and that means a good amount of quantitative and qualitative data and make good decisions based on that and what you're seeing as well.
All right. Carl, anything you want to chime in real quick? Then we'll go to Jimmy. Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I was going to say real quick. Yeah, mm-hmm. Real quick on that. And it kind of still goes back to the initial point that I was talking about earlier. Susie, I believe you are in – maybe I'm misinterpreting this. As I feel as if I'm – based on what I'm hearing is if there is a belief that Boone is making these decisions independent of anybody else. And what I'm saying is that Boone is simply following orders based on the lineups that are being sent. This has been reported. Like I'm not making up. Lineups are being brought down to him by management, and then Boone is then taking that information that is quote unquote highly suggested. That's the term that was used to then make his decisions. So management is insisting on a specific lineup. If he goes rogue, as Cashman was asked, he was asked this a couple months ago. He said, "Can a manager go rogue based on independent decisions that he believes?" And Cashman responded, "Only if he's correct." Now, once that is in play, where do you go with that? Because it's just like in business. If we have a formula, and this is the formula, and you go rogue, and I call you into the office and say, "Hey, wait a second, what are you doing? And you come to me and say, "Well, you know, I just had a feel about this," and you're wrong. We've got some issues. So that's what's in play here. And I think folks are still believing that Boone is like making all of these decisions independent of anybody else. That is simply not borne out by any reporting that has been done or anything that even comes out of his own mouth. You can just hear some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth, and you know he doesn't believe this, some of this stuff. You can just hear it. And that's my frustration with this, is that we're still on the blame Boone bandwagon, which only seems to happen, by the way, when they lose. It didn't seem to come up when they were winning, as I mentioned weeks ago, but only when they lose, which is frustrating to me.
All right, let's go to Jimmy, and then I think there's a lot coming from up top going down, and I'm going to add that element as far as the lineups and how these things have been switching. Hey, Jimmy, what's up, man? Your thoughts on the Yankees over the last week with Toronto, the Mets, even before that with the Orioles. It's been a bad week. We can all agree. And, I mean, today's game, how do you want to look at today's game? Good Yankees, as far as despite being down 5-0 to a bad Twins team. What's your thoughts, Jimmy? Welcome back, man. How's everything, man?
I mean, it really has been a crazy week. I mean, my thoughts, it just comes down to, you know, our pitching just hasn't been there. And when we're hitting, it's like, you know, I feel like we're hitting when it's like way too late. I mean, you look at, I feel like what we're doing now is we wait till we're down by 3 or 4 runs, and then we try to play catch up and come back, which, you know, some games it works out, like today's game, and then some games like the Mets game last night, it didn't work out. So you can't always go by that. So that's what I think is really going on. Like, we're just inconsistent all around. We're not doing the little things anymore that we were doing. And last night when they sent Velasquez back down, it was like, why would you send your best? Yeah, I know we needed a pitcher, but why would you send your best shortstop that's been playing? Velasquez is a young guy that's been playing lights out. Why do you send him down and put Glaber back there? Like, you know, that's a decision that didn't make any sense to me, because I mean, you usually go with the guy that, my opinion, you go with the guy that's doing good at the moment. So I hope they bring Velasquez back. But I mean that's my thoughts on this whole week, is that, you know, we're not doing the little things that we should be doing anymore. And then if we are doing them, we're doing them too late.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what I was going to say and bring up to Susie Prof and Carl about this infield shuffle, like Velasquez and the Gleyber Torres situation. You know, that's kind of a more of a management thing. I think this is where Carl is saying they're pulling the decision or making the decision on who's in there, who's not. And to me, it really comes down to execution, like the poor play, especially on Friday with the defense, man. In the infield, it was just sloppy and just couldn't get out of Dodge. They're just shooting themselves in the foot with terrible defense and just allowing the Mets to hang around in innings and tack on runs, things like that. But I'm with you, Jimmy, as far as, like, watching it, you know, with my own eyes. Like, you know, Velasquez defensively has been very good. You know, he's been pretty good. And Torres has shown at shortstop, you know, I know they put him at second base today, to be lackadaisical, guys beating out ground, you know, singles in the infield because, you know, Torres taking his sweet time, throwing at the first, just stupid shit like that, man. So, you know, we always, you know, like you said, Susie Prof, Torres was groomed to be a shortstop, but, you know, there was a time, you know, where, you know, Didi was there and, you know, at second base, or even DJ LeMay, who was playing short, either or. You know, Torres played an okay second base, so if it's not working out at shortstop, we can't afford a guy who we think we're grooming. I'm not saying you disagree with it. I'm just saying put the best person at short, put the best person at third. It's been a revolving door because, like you said, Gio's been in and out of the line because of injuries, COVID. Then you had Odor over there. You had, all kind of people on that left side of the infield. And I just – it's almost to me, it's like I'm hoping they play better defense. And that's hope – you know, like it's a hope thing, and then it's, the reality is it is what it is with these guys. They're not a great defensive team, and it's just a matter of time in a game when you've got two outs and you're trying to get guys out, things like that. And, you know, you're trying to get out of the inning, and you're going to see what you saw in the Met game. And I'm at peace with that dysfunction right there with this team. If they get over it, I'll be happy. But here's the question. This is where it gets real interesting. And I'm talking about shuffling lineups. I'm going to go back to you, CZ Prof. This is where it gets real interesting to me. I really believe I like this Gallo in left field, Judge in center, Stanton in right field. It maximizes your lineup. And I see that management is putting Gardner in there. Not only putting Gardner in there to get in there as far as, you know, especially in the National League part. I think, I don't know if it was that home run you mentioned during the tweet, you know, the big home run last week, and then also that triple he had early on in the game versus the Mets because of his hustle. Because that's one thing I could respect out of Gardner is he always lays it out on the line, whether he produces or not. He always gives it his best. And I think this lineup shuffling away, because there was at one point he was at the bottom of the lineup. Now he's at number one in the lineup. Now he's batting number two today behind DJ LeMahieu. And DJ LeMahieu at one point was batting number five. It is real unpredictable. I don't know what the mindset of these players when they go for 1, 2, 5 or whatever. I think they're just playing with the, you know, having cards that are dealt with this team. I say all this to say, maximizing your lineup, what would you see just going forward? Because we only have a couple of more weeks for the rest of this month before the regular season, and you've got Boston, you got Toronto right there ahead of us by a half game a game. What do you think they're going to do, Susie Prof, as far as maximizing who should be out in the outfield or, you know, on every day? Who should be DNA, you know, DHing? You got, and plus when I say this, you know, it's not even a gimme that we could beat Baltimore now. We got three games versus them, in Baltimore, three games versus the Indians. And I think we got Texas after that because we haven't played Texas at home yet. And on paper, we should just kill these teams, but I can't even give them the benefit of the doubt. What's your thoughts as far as maximizing lineups? Who you want to see on that outfield? What was your lineup you would like to see as of right now, September the 13th?
Well, as I said, I would have played Judge in center field over Gardner in the Met series because it's exactly what you said. I just think that's the best outfield that we have right now. As far as and it puts those bats in the lineup. I mean, I know we were playing a National League team. It was about, you know, getting the bats in the lineup and having a decent bench and replacement players for later on as you move through the game. The what I'm hearing now is for the infield is that LeMahieu is going to go and play third base. They're going to move Gio Urshela to shortstop. Gleyber Torres will be playing second base, and Rizzo will be playing first. That gives you a bench guy or a DH guy in potentially Voit, which would be good if he can get some good reps and good at-bats. And that's probably, if they could stay that way and actually see if that gels, if that's going to be a good lineup moving forward defensively and offensively, then I think they need to try it. Go through a cycle of 3 days of that lineup and kind of see if that's going to flow and if that's going to work. I mean, I realize they want to get Gardner in. He's a left-handed bat in the lineup. I got you. I understand. But, you know, he can come off the bench, too, and be productive or be in as a replacement player. I just don't see why you're putting in a Tyler Wade, except for maybe to pinch run or, as I said, defensive replacement. But if Gleyber Torres is hitting and is comfortable at second base and he's in the right mindset confidence-wise, then leave him in there. And I will say, though, Gio Urshela, if he's not right, if he just isn't comfortable, then they're going to have to, you know, bring in Velasquez. They'll bring him back up. I mean, Jimmy, he was only down because they had to bring up Schmidt, and you knew that. But, you know, hopefully we're gonna see him come back because I think he's defensively, he has a lot of promise. I think they're probably likely going to trade for a shortstop next year, and none of this will even be an issue. But you asked me the question about the outfield. I think that the best chance that we have is going with Gallo in left, Judge in center, and Stanton in right field for right now.
Okay, follow-up question then before we go to Carl. Follow-up question. 8 games, right? You got Baltimore, at Baltimore. You got Cleveland and Texas. I mean, you should have your way. Mm-hmm. But the way we've been playing, it gives me no confidence that we are not going to just clear, you know, just clear all those games. So best-case scenario on this upcoming week and some changes, because, you know, there's actually going to be some carryover by the time we come back next week when we discuss this again. But how do you think we're going to fare over the next week after what you saw this past week? Because I don't think we all saw a sweep coming from it. As well as the Jays were playing, I didn't think that was going to happen. What's your thoughts?
I mean, you know how I always feel, Steve. It's about winning series, right? We have to win each one of these series. We drop a game here or there, that's okay. To me, you've got to get in a groove of winning. And, the 13 in a row, was that an anomaly? I don't know. I think they went on a hot streak. I think things were all flowing. I think their pitchers were good. I think, you know, what it comes down to, Steve, is Cole going to be on the mound on Tuesday? Because as a mindset, the team seems to be playing better when they know that their stud is on the mound or is able to play. There seems to be a sigh of relief when he does pitch. So I hope he's supposed to pitch tomorrow night in Baltimore. I heard he had, you know, good reps in the bullpen, you know, so hopefully, and didn't have any issues with his hamstring. So hopefully if that happens, that could shift the mindset for this team and, you know, potentially, you know, really kick off a very good series against the Orioles. But don't count them out because, you know, all these teams can play spoilers for us and for others that are being played by these guys in the coming couple of weeks. So but it'll be interesting to see. Cole comes out, pitches well. We can get that first game under our belt. That's going to make all the difference. But to me, it's got to be winning the series for all of these. We've got to win the series and get all the way up to Tampa and then see if there's anything we can do as a last-ditch effort.
Right on. Let's go to Carl and get his thoughts. And that's another thing. Tampa and Toronto are playing today as well. You know, this is a lot of back and forth. I think Boston's on the West Coast versus the Mariners, and then they got Baltimore at home. So, you know, I'm going to be back and forth all week between how we do versus all the other teams that are in front of us, even behind us, because Seattle, I think this is probably their last chance or the last-ditch effort to get back in this thing. And if they get at least 2 out of 3 versus Boston this week, I mean, don't count out the Mariners or the Athletics, then as well as the Blue Jays. Hey, Carl, what's your thoughts as far as – I know you look as far as we are what we are after, let's say, 140 games, 150, whatever – I mean, the Yankees this upcoming week and what you've been seeing, you know, Seattle, and any things that you think is going to surprise you this upcoming week when we play these games in Baltimore and in Cleveland? What's your thoughts, man? And then we could go back to Jimmy and then get around MLB the rest of the AL and NL.
I think we've seen enough games now where nothing is a surprise anymore. I think the one issue now is whether or not the Yankees simply have enough starting pitchers to get through these games. You know, this Cole pitch tomorrow, as Susie said, who knows? I don't think, has that officially been determined right now? I'm not, I believe he will, but I'm don't hold me to that. But after that, you know, the rest of the guys that are starting these games are not, because it's an issue here. Here's the issue that's coming up. Outside of when Cole starts, nobody else is really giving enough innings to sort of hide the bullpen's badness, right? You know, if a starting pitcher is going five innings, the Yanks don't have enough quality relievers to pitch four innings anymore. You know, they you know, as long as you have Chapman being a mental case, Green doing whatever he's doing, Britton out for the rest of the year, Loaisiga, which has been a huge loss, his inability to come in and pitch anywhere between three and six outs, you know, every 2 days or back-to-back days, depending on the day. You know, you take those four relievers right there, and now you're seeing Clay Holmes and Wandy Peralta. No, nothing against him. You know, who's the other guy's name? I mean, they get, you know, just take a hat, put some, you know, bottle up some paper and pick a name out of the hat. That's what's going on. So, unfortunately, as long as you have that in play, no matter who the opponent is right now, unless the Yankees are just going to go out and score, you know, 10, 12 runs, which they've not been doing still, then these games are consistently too close to call every night, and they are putting the game too much in the balance where games can be stolen late just based on the fact that, one, the starting pitching is not giving enough innings, and two, the bullpen is bad. So you've got that issue in play. As far as Torres goes, would this really be an issue if he was hitting? Like, we're not really suggesting that the reason why Torres is moving to second base is because he's mentally screwed up by him playing short. We're really not making that argument, are we? I'm hoping. When I heard that today, that the Yanks are moving towards the second base, I looked at it almost like this is sort of like a last-ditch desperation heave to try to, you know, salvage whatever Torres has not been for the last, like, 900 at-bats now. This is our last bullet here. We could have done this in like July, but you know, now that we only have 20 games to go, let's just give this a shot and see if it works. When I heard that that's what they were doing today, I was like, boy, you guys are really desperate now, aren't you? You know, so from that standpoint, I'm like, all right, try that out. But you know, how many extra base hits does he have now? I think it's 25 now. 25 extra base hits, which is like the second worst in all of baseball. For those that play either play his position or just like play for the amount of bats that he has this season, like it's some incredibly awful number. So hey, give it a shot, see what happens. And now here's what may happen. Now that the Yankees have to go and get a shortstop at the end of the season, they're going to go sign Carlos Correa from Houston. I know the fans don't like him, but clearly he's probably going to be a guy that the Yankees are going to be forced to target because now they don't have a shortstop. So, you know, I know the fans don't like, you know, all that Houston stuff, but you know what? If Correa's been wearing pinstripes next season, which is a pretty good possibility, that was a name I've heard on the radio today, be prepared to start, you know, giving him a standing ovation at the stadium in April next season when the games get started. One last thing on the week here. You know, right. You look at the other teams here, the Yankees have to be in a position where – the last six games or so are in your control, because I think what's going to happen now, I think the idea of, like, I remember talking about this a couple weeks ago about having Cole start the wild card game. I don't think they're going to be in a situation where they can dictate terms on that anymore. They've given that away. But the Red Sox, I'm looking at their last six games of the season. They play Baltimore and Washington the last six games of the season. I don't know who Toronto plays as I'm looking that up right now, but you know, if you have to win games against Tampa the last weekend of the season, and Tampa would love to kill you guys, you know, kill us and get us out of it. And I think the Yankees play, I think it's the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, and Tampa those last nine games. You cannot be in a situation where, you know, you are putting your fate on those games. That is a very risky proposition with the way the pitching staff is currently constructed.
And Carl, more of the reason these games, you have to cash in now. And then see where the cards lay when you have to play Tampa. Meaning, this like Susie Prof said, as far as winning series, Baltimore, Cleveland, Texas, you got it. You at six out of eight at least out of those. You know, 75%. You have to. I mean, it's easier for me to say that, but the way they've been playing, we just don't know. And that goes more to your point because, like you said, Tampa will bury us if it's on the line. If the Yankees are in or out. You know what I'm saying? Out of the wild card spot, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they love beating the Yankees. You know, I know they have not done as much as this season as they are if they get a chance that with those last three games to be able, if they just need to, like, say, win one game that knocks the Yankees out or put them in a position where the Yankees have to basically use, you know, every high leverage player that they have on the roster the last 2 days to get into the postseason, Tampa Bay is going to take advantage and do that all day.
Now, one more question for you, then we'll go to Jimmy, and then we'll get around MLB and get off, you know, final thoughts. Carl, let me ask you this about today's performance or the starting from Gil. And then, Susie Prof, when we get around to you for final thoughts, if you can answer that too. Jimmy, same thing. How would you analyze Gil's performance in the sense of, okay, it was an inning eater. He gave you 8 Ks. I mean, he gave you good quality strikeouts, and, you know, but the problem was, you know, the big home runs, especially at the top of the, you know, first, and, you know, the three home runs, basically, you know, you're down 5 off the rip, but you did get 6 innings out of him because you already know our bullpen is short. It lacks. It's not in fully intact. I mean, I would even call it a grade, but knowing Gil, his age, and, you know, as far as quality, I wouldn't call it a quality start, but how would you analyze what we needed out of him today? Yay or nay? Or, and then, because, you know, people could look at it both ways, you know, as far as, you know, giving you innings or giving up the runs. How do you look at that? And we go to Jimmy after that.
I mean, they were lucky the Minnesota Twins were the opponent today. You know, the Twins had that bullpen game going from the start, so that sort of played a role in how that whole thing sort of played out. You know, give him credit for at least, you know, getting through the 6 innings considering how he started. You know, normally you get in the situation where you're down, you know, you're down by that amount, you know, early on. You know, if you're giving him 5 runs after 3 innings, you know, you're likely not seeing the 4th inning. But they had to stick with him because, I mean, who are you going to bring in? You know, Mr. Gasoline, Andrew Heaney? I mean, you know, come on. Let's we don't want to see any more of that. But, you know, he held them just enough to where the offense, you know, got, you know, some of those runs back. You know, I actually joked, I don't know if anybody was thinking about it, when Gallo bunted for that single, I think around the 5th, the Yankees didn't have any hits. I was sort of cynically thinking, I'm like, is he just trying to bunt just so the Yankees can not be no hit? Like, is that really what we're doing right now? I was actually thinking that for a moment, what had happened.
Did Gallo go rogue on that?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I was laughing. It worked because the first baseman was just off the base. He, you know, just to play that ball. I don't think nobody in the stadium saw that coming. Jimmy, anything, you know, what was your thoughts on the Gil performance and how you feel as far as if we don't get through Baltimore, Cleveland, and Texas, is the season over because of what's at the back end with Boston and Tampa at the end of the schedule? Are we done if we don't get this thing done in the next 3 series? What's your thoughts, and what's your thoughts on Gil as well? And then we get some final thoughts as we go around the rest of the league, if you guys have any thoughts on all in any AL or NL team.
Gil, yeah, I mean, it wasn't great, but he has to – What Gil's got to do is he has to stop giving up home runs. I mean, when you're giving up runs to the Minnesota Twins, who aren't, like, yeah, they're decent, but they're not great. Yeah, you know, that's a little bit of an issue there. But I mean, I'm glad that we were able to have just enough offense to come back in the game, and you know, that's how I feel about that. And as far as these series, these are big series, and like the only way we're gonna win these series, Steve, is we have to make sure that we don't tire out our bullpen any more than it already is. And the way to do that, we have to score runs from the get go. We can't be waiting until let's wait till the 5th inning and then, you know, try to play catch up. You know, it might work out well against, you know, a team like Minnesota, but when we start playing teams like, you know, Toronto and Tampa. Like, we can't play that game anymore. You know, we're not going to be able to play that game anymore because we're going to be too far behind if the bullpen keeps doing what it's doing. So my key to win these series, we got to score runs, and the bullpen has to get its stuff together, because if it don't, we're going to be in big trouble.
Right. I'm going to be honest, man. I'm going to give props where props is due, because it's beyond just our players, how we look at it. I mean, this is a talented league, and people, you know, we got to play against the opponents, and they're going to put out their best products and all that. I think Polanco for the Twins is having a very good year on a bad team. I mean, I think Polanco is having a year that we expected Gleyber Torres to have at the plate as a shortstop. And I think that's kind of the frustration when you're seeing opponents, especially shortstops, that we, you know, opposing shortstops have a big slugging years, and Polanco is one of them. He's just on a bad team. So, Carl, you talk about Carlos Correa. I'm not sure about Polanco's contractual situation, but that's another guy. If things can't work out for the foreseeable future with Gleyber Torres and they want to replace your shortstop, I mean, you always look at a team like the Twins, or ain't going nowhere, that will, you could definitely probably put a package together for a guy like that, or Correa, however you want to look at it. Let me say this real quick. You know, Matt Scherzer for the Dodgers, that 3,000th strikeout, I watched some of that game during the football as well. The Padres getting smoked. I don't know what the fuck happened with them, man. I mean, they were front-running for a little bit, and L.A. is trying to catch the Giants in the NL, and that's another thing. Let me talk about the Giants, and if you guys have any thoughts on these NL teams or AL teams or whatever, the Giants, man, it's like, you know, they put a bunch of guys you haven't seen in a while, Buster Posey, you know, Liguria, all those years with the Rays, and Estrada, and, you know, Carl, you already know, with Chris Bryant being a longtime Cub and being traded to the Giants, man, I think they shocked a lot of people, man. They are a fun team to watch. And now, of course, I'm rooting for the Yankees, you know, get through and thin. Once they're out, I don't want the Dodgers in it. You know, I kind of like Milwaukee. And I'll talk about them in a second. But the San Francisco Giants is a team I like. I don't care for any other team in the NL, the Braves, the Phillies, anybody in that mix. Brewers are okay with me, and I think they've had a nice week. I think they won a few in a row because they got smoked by Philadelphia, and then they came back and beat the snot out of them. But that middle of that lineup, you know, Christian Yelich hasn't been his MVP self per se, but he has a lot of backup with Garcia and Alvarez in that lineup, man. And they put on some good series versus the Giants about a week ago. And then the Brewers did their thing, winning five in a row against the Indians and the Phillies. So I was just giving you guys my thoughts as far as, you know, that's another thing about the Yankees. They haven't totally lost things because the teams like Boston have been up and down. Toronto's just been catching up, and Oakland and Seattle have been up and down and losing and things like that. So final thoughts from everybody. Let's go to Susie Prof. Give us your final thoughts from Bleeding Yankee Blue. You got articles coming down from Bleeding Yankee Blue, and definitely share. I know you've been going crazy on Twitter. Love your tweets because it gives me a temperature gauge of how we're doing that day if I haven't been keeping up, man. Susie, probably your final thoughts, and then we'll go to Carl and Jimmy and wrap up.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I like that you brought up other teams because I was thinking the other day, like, what would I do if the Yankees don't make it into the postseason? I agree with you. I've liked the San Francisco Giants for some time. Obviously, Mike Talkman is on the team. I know he's been hurt. I like Yastrzemski in right field, and obviously adding Chris Bryant. I think they're a great team to watch, and I'm excited for them. And I love that they've been going head to head with the Dodgers. It's been exciting baseball to watch, and that's what this is about. It's just really like loving the game and loving when you see like just really good defensive baseball or consistent hitting and just when a team really gels, just a really good game. I Philadelphia is not my team, clearly. But seeing a game in Citizens Bank Park and even if you're rooting for the other side, it's just exciting to be at the ballpark and see just really professional baseball. I'm glad that I haven't spent a dollar on Yankees other than my time this year because, I mean, I see my friends, they're all, going to these games, or they're eating the great food and sitting in the legend seats, and we're getting beat up by Baltimore, for instance. So, you know, it's been that up and down. It's been, you called it the infield shuffle. I like that. It's unfortunately, it's been a shuffle, a card deck of, you know, sure, here's the suggested lineup. And I think I told you this last time. Every time I get an alert that the lineup has been submitted, I get anxious because I'm afraid, what are we doing now? And I know that Boone doesn't do this in isolation. But I think that, you know, this form of baseball, very statistics driven, very ghost runner on second base, like, you know, driven by how long the game is laid and how many timeouts, how many trips to the mound, all these kinds of things have really changed the shape of baseball and what I enjoy watching. So what's coming this week? I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, Cole is, you know, and looking at my MLB app, Cole is slated to start tomorrow. I'm hoping that, again, from a momentum standpoint, that he gets things going and that we can, you know, take two out of three in Baltimore, and, you know, take two out of three against Texas, same with Boston, same with Toronto, and just, like, you know, chip away at like really trying out an infield and an outfield more consistently to see if we can just get there. But I'll be honest, Steve, I mean, this team just isn't offensively and defensively a postseason or a far postseason team. I mean, they're not scrappy like the Nationals a couple of years ago that were really, really getting better and better every time they played, and you were really rooting for that team because they just were scrapping away. They're not that team. I just don't think they're going to get any better. This is as good as it gets. If we can squeak in and get through to the wild card, fantastic. If we can win the one-game play-in, fantastic. But I can't imagine we're going to go much further, and we have to be okay with that and love the game and root for another team. Preferably not an American League team, so that we can kind of get through October and maybe kind of alleviate some of the pain that the Giants might give us, meaning the New York Football Giants, that is, and grief that we might get from them in October and November.
Susie Prof one on Instagram. Follow her, give her on Twitter. It's going to be a fun conversation this week. I'm going to definitely be paying attention a lot this week on Twitter, for sure, on the Yankee side of things. Shout out to Susie Pop. Thank you very much. Carl, your final thoughts. Give us your final thoughts on the Yankees, and if you have any point on the rest of MLB, any other teams that you, if you've been following, your final thoughts, sir, and then we'll go to Jimmy, the lone Eagles fan on this episode. But, you know, sorry, Jimmy.
Yeah, you know, thinking about the rest of the league, you know, I am impressed by the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yep.
I don't know. I've only seen them a handful of times. But from the times I've seen them this season, they've been very impressive. You were mentioning about the Giants. You know, that's like the AARP squad, okay? I was looking at some mm-hmm. of the ages on some of their players. You know, Posey's, I think, 34, Belt's 33, Crawford's 34, Longoria's 35. Like, these are dudes that, like, You know, if you're building it, if you're, you know, they're finally getting their one shining moment, because a couple of years ago, those, you know, three of those guys at least, you know, were, you know, injured or they, you know, underperformance. You know, maybe you thought age was catching up to them, and they're finally, you know, for one year, it may not be a repeatable situation, but for this one particular year, you know, they're finally having, you know, a chance in the sun. And you know, one thing that, you know, caught me was I was watching a Kevin Gausman pitch the other day. And, you know, he was a sort of a nobody in Baltimore, and the Giants took a chance on him. I think he may have pitched a little bit for Atlanta. I think he maybe last year. But all of a sudden this year, for whatever reason, you know, Gausman is having an incredible season. And I always ask myself, how come we talk about the Yankees and their inability to find pitching. Can someone would need to explain to me, how come the Yankees seem to be almost like the only team in baseball that seemingly can't seem to find a reclamation project like that and turn them into something? You know, for some reason, you know, the only guys that can do so on, you know, that can pitch well on the Yankees are guys that, you know, the Yankees are basically writing big checks to. You know, Kevin Gausman, I think, is 14-5 with a ERA of like 2.6. He's never done that ever in his career ever until this season. You know, can the Yankees figure something out to, you know, get the development? Because the pitching development on this, you know, in terms of starting pitching over the last like 25 years, not named Andy Pettit, it has been just incredibly poor. But one last thing as we say goodbye, Joey Gallo has become a – he was getting booed the other day by the fans for, you know, poor performance, I guess. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, when he came to the Yankees, you know, he was a fan favorite. And then all of a sudden when he wasn't performing, there was this weird suggestion that somehow, you know, the bright lights of New York is somehow affecting him. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, it wasn't affecting him for the first 2 weeks, but when he's not performing, it is affecting him. Like, why does this keep coming up? Like, it is the – I feel like some of the analysis of – and maybe this is – and this is definitely bleed over to football. Some of the analysis I hear in some of these terms that I keep hearing, it just – it's lazy analysis. Like, why – someone – maybe this is for another week, but, man, the fact that – that is the suggestion, that the reason why Gallo isn't performing is because he's, you know, succumbing to the pressure. It's like one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life.
You know, we may have to do an episode on that, Carl, man. We may have to catch up and talk about booing, because I'm not – I ain't going to lie. I'll boo here and there, but I'm not blatant with the booing. So I won't – I don't know. It's more of like I want to boo the opponent more than anything. I don't think I boo – my own team. I can't recall. So I want to make it uncomfortable for the opponent. So booing your own players, yeah, I'm with you on that, man. Unless that motivates them. We know, unless that player comes out in a press conference or something and says, hey, boo me, it motivates me, then I wouldn't do it. But yeah, I'm with you on that, man. Shout out to At The C Notes. We may have to do a separate fan episode on that, because I think that is an interesting topic, man. Jimmy, you're the lone Eagles fan on this episode, Philadelphia Eagles, right?
Yeah.
And congratulations on the win. Hurts looked good yesterday. I ain't gonna lie, man. they stomped the Falcons. But your thoughts? I mean, I also know you're a Miami Hurricanes fan, and I'm sorry what happened with you guys versus Alabama. That was disgusting, man. But if you your final thoughts as well.
But I'll get back to baseball first. I mean, on the Eagles, yeah. I mean, Hurts did look really good. I really like what he did. He threw the ball well, and he was calm, and he was cool, and all that. But as far as baseball goes, my thoughts first on, who I've been following is, you know, the Angels, man. Like, and what, Ohtani, week in and week out, he's just on fire, hitting, pitching. Like the guy can do it all. I think the Angels are gonna be fun to watch. The rest of the year, they got a good thing going. So I mean that's my other team to watch out for. But as far as my final thoughts on the Yankees go, we just gotta find a way to win these series, no matter how we do it. You know, but we got to do it in a way, like I said earlier, we got to do it in a way where we're not tiring out the bullpen. Because if we're giving up 4 or 5 runs a game, we got to tire out the bullpen. There's no way in hell that we're gonna be able to keep that up when we're playing teams like, you know, Tampa and Toronto. So we got to get that problem fixed, and we got to get it fixed now. That's the only way we're making a postseason. You know, anyway, but it was a great episode tonight, Steve. And go Yanks, man. Let's see how this week goes.
All right, cool, man. We got to get out, man. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher for the baseball. Check out the football episodes, the basketball episodes, the hockey episodes, and the fan-driven series episodes featuring fans and topics, things like that. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're out. Bleed blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Blue,